On this podcast, I will be talking with Rita Ernst, the musical director for Upper Canada Brass. Welcome, Rita.
Hello, Marge. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're very welcome. So glad that we found the time to do this podcast. Now, I have never met you before, so please tell me a little bit about yourself, any musical instruments you play. I've made that assumption. And what is your role? As musical director, what does that entail?
Okay, first a little bit about me. I was born and raised in Nova Scotia with a musical mother. My father, not so musical, but he just loved listening to my sister and my practicing sessions. Don't know why, but he did. From my mother's came the introduction to the piano. My grandfather sent me his violin to learn. Through my high school music teacher, I ended up on French horn, although I wanted to play the flute. But I did take up a secondary instrument when I was in the senior band, which was in the junior band playing the clarinet. So I sort of had a bit of a smattering of everything. I came to Toronto for my undergrad studies in French horn and basically stayed in Southern Ontario ever since then. And over the years, I've been fortunate enough to play with various orchestras, do some work with the Canadian Opera Company, stepped into the pit for Phantom. And I was also a member of the Canadian Forces re Primary Reserves. So that was a 30-year part-time involvement in my musical career. I also conduct other ensembles now. I tutor, I adjudicate, and I arrange music for various ensembles. So it was during my time as the with the Canadian Forces, with Primary Reserves, that I took up the baton, a new instrument, and started down the path of being a conductor. I returned to university to do my master's in music and conducting. And through the influence of my husband, who's a euphonium player, I took up the front, sorry, the tenor horn, because he just loves the British style brass band and its repertoire. And it just made me think as I was doing this that I remembered years ago I had a t-shirt fashioned by Marilyn Brooks. She was a fashion designer, first out of the States, then moved to Canada. But she had a t-shirt that said, "Music is my life," and it is. I sort of connected with that t-shirt. But anyway, as to your other question there about being a musical director, I look at it as being a coordinator. I have to coordinate administration, the planning. And in front of the band, I have to coordinate all those musicians during the rehearsals and the concerts. From my perspective, I have to select and source the repertoire in accordance to the capabilities of the musicians. I also have to know specific equipment requests, especially for the percussion. So you might have only some music that only has a small percussion section. And other ones can have a big one as big as five. So you have like a full back spread back there. So you have to sort of work on all of that. When it comes to the music, I mean, obviously, we have to, as conductors and leaders, we need to study those scores. We basically have to be in depth with the instruction manual for the chart that we are playing. We have to understand the composer's intent of what he expected. It's easier in some of the modern repertoire because in this day and age, you can just email them and say, "Hey, I don't understand what you did here. Let me know." But if you go back to composers who are no longer with us, you don't have that option. So you have to understand that a little bit better. And then you have to work with the team to produce the best possible musical product you can put out. In the case of Upper Canada Brass, we're a little bit different than most community organizations because we do not rehearse weekly. We just rehearse four rehearsals and then put the concert on. So it's not a weekly thing. So sometimes we can be away from each other for 2 months, depending on how the schedule works and when our concerts come. So it can becomes a bit of a crash course when it comes to 2 months.
Okay, so you really are so busy. There, I am impressed with how many different things you have to do. Okay. Can you tell us something about the history of the Upper Canada Brass Band? In searching around your website, I noted that you had been called something else.
So Upper Canada Brass actually started off as an ensemble, so just a small group of people called Little Wind Music, which was my twist on a little night music or eine kleine Nachtmusik. Because what we were at that time was even we were much more of flexible instrumentation. So at one time we had a wind octet, which 10 people meant two flutes, two oboes, two bassoons, two clarinets, and two horns. We've also had just your standard brass quintet. We had a horn quintet, like five French horns. And we also had like an 11-piece brass choir, for lack of a better definition of that, or brass ensemble. But yes, me being a brass player, that meant that most of our performances were with the brass ensemble, but it was nice to venture out on some of these other little types of ensembles. The other thing, unfortunate thing, or fortunate, but it's a point of view, euphonium is not common in those instrumentations, and my husband felt a little left out, so he wanted to play. So
Yep.
we gradually morphed into using conical instruments, which you will find in the British brass band system, but we started morphing into what was known as a pattern of the James Sheppard versatile brass. So again, a 10-piece brass group, but all instruments from the British brass band. And then we had enough people who were interested to turn around, and by 2018, we basically, in January 2018, we became a proper British style brass band, as full complement as we could. We had 22 out of 25 positions filled.
Whoa, okay. Now, I'm still trying to understand what a brass band is, and I think you're getting me more confused by talking about a British brass band and a regular brass band. And then you've also talked about wind ensembles. So are brass bands a subset of wind ensembles? And what is the difference with the British and the non-British brass
Okay,
bands?
let's start off with there are different styles of brass bands.
Okay.
When you say brass band, it means different things in different areas. So in the Balkans, they have a particular instrumentation for a brass band. Their instruments are more European than our North Americans, so they have their instruments are different. In the Netherlands and in Belgium, you have brass bands that are better known as fanfare bands. They have all the brass instruments that you find in Europe, but they also include saxophones because a saxophone is made of brass, although it doesn't produce the sound the same way. Then when you get to New Orleans, a brass band can also include clarinets and sousaphones. So that's why we call ourselves a British style brass band, which is the British tradition of the colliery band. So the colliery bands were the mining bands. So they would have instruments that were all part of the saxhorn family, which was an experimentation of Adolf Sax, who also created the saxophone. Yeah, he was a huge
Okay.
instrument maker.
Okay, fascinating. I did not expect quite such an explanation. I thought it was
Oh,
going to be
sorry.
this. No, this. Okay.
But anyway,
Okay.
so British style brass band, we use the conical instruments. Now, just if you give me a moment so we don't get confused here. Conical means cone. So the diameter of the tube at the mouthpiece is smaller and gradually increases all the way through until you get to the bell stem. If you take a trumpet, for example, it's known as cylindrical. It is the same size diameter from the mouthpiece through the body of the instrument until you get to the bell. It has a huge difference in tone when you have something that is the same size or something that flares. So that's what makes a British brass band sound so different than a brass ensemble that uses orchestral brass, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay, that's a lot to think about. Okay. Okay. So please tell me a little bit about this Upper Canada Brass Band. Like who's there? How many people?
Now that's a great question. Thank you for that. Upper Canada Brass, as I said, follows the British style. So from an instrumentation perspective, it's pretty prescribed. There's a little bit of flexibility, but it all has to do with keeping a balance in the sound and in the product. So there are normally 25 brass players and 2 to 3 percussionists. We have a range of instruments from the soprano cornet, which is pitched higher than a regular B flat cornet. We only have one of those, but we will have 9 cornet players. Then we will have one flugelhorn, which we also see in the jazz idiom now. We have 3 tenor horns, which sort of has the same function as a French horn, but it's not pitched the same and it definitely does not sound the same. So that's in the middle of the band. Then we have 2 euphoniums and 2 baritones. They are 2 different instruments. A lot of people think they're the same. They interchange the words, but they are 2 different instruments, shaped differently, sound differently, and have 2 different functions. And then we do have trombones out of the orchestral systems where we have 2 tenors and 1 bass. And then we have 4 basses to anchor all of that. So we have 2 basses that are a little bit higher in pitch and 2 lower, but we have basically the entire range in a brass scenario when we
Okay,
have that.
I lost track. How many is that?
That's a total of 25.
That is 25. Okay. Woo. That's a lot of instruments. So, yeah.
But if I mean, like, we have community bands that are like community bands, and most of them are what we would clarify as brass reed bands because they have brass and reed instruments. That can host easily 50 or 60.
Okay.
So from the numbers wise, it doesn't look huge on the stage. It does
Okay.
mean we can fit into spaces better.
Yeah. Okay. Very good.
But and you had the question about brass and winds. So the if you talk about wind instruments, anything that creates a sound through blowing air, like an aerophone, belongs to that group. So you have wind instruments, big group, and subgroups, your woodwinds and your brass as 2 subsets.
Okay. I thank you for all that information. I'm
Sorry.
learning a lot. Okay. So, are there certain types of music that really lends itself to be played by a brass band?
That's another good question. Actually, there are quite a few styles that work quite well. We do have our traditional early music, which would have been more military and ceremonial in style. You've got the hymns, you've got the marches. By the early 1900s, we started getting orchestral and organ transcriptions. That was really interesting because organ is a bunch of brass pipes or wood boxes. And brass band is, in some cases, as close as you're going to get to an organ out of any of the ensembles that you have. So it's really cool when we get organ transcriptions to work with. One of the famous ones is the toccata from Boylan's Suite Gothique, which is really popular in the organ circuit and is also quite popular in the brass band circuit. So that's just an example. But we also now have, especially in today's scenario, where we have written for the instrumentation that are crossing other genres, such as spirituals, jazz, pop, funk, rock. There's quite a lot. There's a group in the UK called Tubular Bells, and they've basically taken a British brass band and they're playing rock music.
Woo. Okay. Yeah. And I never thought of the brass pipes on a organ as being like brass, close to brass instruments. So that's another thing I learned today. Okay. Now I have been asking all my podcast guests, and there are a lot who are involved with music, to state what they see the power of music to be. So, what are your thoughts? What's the power of music?
That's a powerful question. I'm sure we have all experienced at some point the emotional aspects of what we hear, the joy, the sadness, relaxation. There's so many YouTube videos right now out there. We gained a lot of scientific insight in the last 20 years. I remember when I was in university, I read the book by McGill University's neuroscientist Daniel Levitin called This Is Your Brain on Music, and was a huge insight because music is a whole brain, whole body experience. The level of that experience is affected by, are you hearing it live? Are you hearing it recorded? Or are you actually performing it? And from my own experience, live is best. So I've witnessed kids at Children Blurview who were quite unresponsive suddenly bang their hands in time to the music I was playing. The fact that I also knew high-level surgeons, orthopedic surgeons, who could not wait until they got to their weekly community orchestra rehearsal to clear their minds from the operating room. So there's so many things that music can do for us. I'm sure with the recent experiences we've had with COVID, that was a huge thing. And as a musician, in one sense, I was dying. In the other sense, it was what kept me going through it. One of my own experiences, my mom passed early in COVID, not from COVID, but it took me 3.5 months before I could go down and visit the family. And that was hard because of the travel restrictions. And for me, it was hard. So when we finally got together and were able to do a celebration of life for her, I pulled out her recorder and I played one of her songs that she grew up with that I remembered as a kid. And it definitely assisted me in through my grieving process that had basically been stalled for 3.5 months. So we've all had that to go through that. And I think somewhere, and in comparison, during COVID, I think I did somewhere close to 60 isolation videos where I just sit down in front of a recorder and play to a click track.
Well,
But
thank you.
it's
Thank
not
you
the
for
same.
sharing that. Like, it's just some insights and that, and I'm going to look up that book you mentioned. I've heard of it, and I think I even read it, but I definitely feel that when I'm actually in a concert hall listening to music live, it is such a better experience, I think, than if you are just listening to a recording. And
There's a synergy there that happens not only with between the musicians playing together and beside their friends and buddies, but between the ensemble and the audience and the audience back to the ensemble. That's that whole synergy that COVID proved it to me needs to be there for it to be beneficial.
Okay. So you do have a concert coming up in Richmond Hill on April the 6th called Voice of the Horn. Can you describe the music, the performance? And it's got a subtitle featuring a tenor hornist. I don't know what a tenor horn or tenor hornist is, so please help me.
Okay, I would love to. Yes, we're excited that on April 6th that we have world-renowned, award-winning Shona White coming from England to perform with us. Early in her musical journey, she played the tenor horn because that's very much in the British culture, in the British brass system. And as I mentioned earlier, it's that middle voice in the array of instruments. She received a BBC Two Radio Young Musicians Award. She performed at the Queen Elizabeth Hall with the BBC Orchestra. She was the first female to win the British Open solo competitions. She also was the recipient of other prestigious awards. So it's just going to be phenomenal that we have her with us. She was also selected, and this is something that I wasn't aware of at the time, but they have the Cosmopolitan Women of Achievement Awards in the UK. And she was selected as finalist for that. So with all of these awards and things that she did, because she was such an excellent musician, it actually started bringing the tenor horn into the mainstream music. She has done videos for fundraising for kids on the tenor horn with along the side of rock stars, so and pop stars. So she's quite a forerunner in that. She'd studied at Salford, which is in the Manchester area, although she originally is from Scotland. She tutored there later, and she's played with a lot of the top brass bands, and has toured quite extensively to New Zealand, the US, throughout Europe. So this is her first trip to Canada. She's also a recording artist, so she's done her own compilation discs of CDs. Two of them were earlier on. Last year, 2023, she recorded two more, of which one has just been released and one is coming out. So she's quite busy herself. On top of that, she's a school teacher during the week. So there's so much more to say about her. She's just an incredible person. I've spent a lot of time on Zoom with her. I've actually met her in person finally after COVID was allowed to let us travel. But she's just an amazing person, phenomenal musician, and her instrument is a tenor horn. So just like we say a flute player is a flautist because she plays the tenor horn, we say tenor hornist. She is going to be covering a range of repertoire. So she's got some of the old, what we consider old standards, the Eric Lightson's Old Rustic Bridge, but then she's got some new ones that were just on her recording she did last year by Philip Harper called Beauty Within. So there is a good range, new, old, technical, melodic. And the band is just so pleased that we're able to accompany her on this.
Yeah, that sounds so amazing there. Okay, I'm going to put the l link to buy tickets for this April 6th concert in the podcast notes. It is at St. Mary's Anglican Church in Richmond Hill at Young and
Yes.
Major Mac. It's not the first time that you perform there. Is there a reason that you do choose that location?
When we came into existence in 2018, we outgrew my basement. That's when
Okay.
it was the 10 piece or the 11 piece, my basement could sit quite well. So in 2018, we were on a search for a location that would suit our acoustical requirements. And we didn't need a huge space. And yeah, when you're a group starting off for the first time, finances do come into play somewhat. And they just basically welcomed us with open arms and they just said, we'd love to have you part of our outreach partnership that they have because they have other musical ensembles that will rehearse in their facilities. So they've just been so welcoming. And because music is such a core to their own parish life, it was an extension of that for them. So they were quite pleased with doing that. It's got great acoustics. It's not huge for a church. There's churches in downtown Toronto that are much larger, but acoustically it's nice. And from an audience perspective, because it's not huge, it gives you that much more intimate feel. So that synergy that I was mentioning earlier is much tighter and much nicer when you're
Okay.
able to
So
almost,
very nice.
I
No, it
wouldn't
sounds
say
like
sit
it's
on top of the band, but
yeah.
not feel like you're in this big cavernous
Okay, it
facility.
will sounds like it will be an absolutely wonderful concert. So you also do play at events, celebrations, weddings. Your band does travel. So I noted there are even competitions for brass bands. Can you tell us about that experience, this competition for brass bands? I'm trying to imagine it.
It's from the British perspective, it's basically their lifeblood. And this started off again, if you go back far enough into the history, especially if you go back to the 50s, 60s, and 70s of the colliery bands, so the mining bands, because work was pretty dismal for them. In many cases, the companies were either opening or closing or barely staying alive. So for the miners, being part of the band was sort of their outlet, but it also became, when they got into the competitions, a bit of bragging rights. If they got top honors, like, yay, Grindcore is better than somebody else or whatever, so you have all of this friendly competition, but it's definitely a lifeblood. So the rivalry would be kind of strong during the competition, but everybody would be at the pub afterwards. The type of thing. And in those cases, the prize money was a huge incentive too. because that could mean the difference between keeping the band going or not. And obviously the honor. From in North America, though, we have an association called the North American Brass Band Association, or NABBA for short, because that's too long, which hosts a competition each year around the continent. So it changes. With over 100 community bands in the US and maybe 20 in Canada, in 2018, we decided to venture to NABBA to be involved with the larger brass band family. We made lots of friends, have learned a lot from listening to these other bands because a lot of them are at a higher caliber, because you get the full range from novice bands to really high professional end quality bands. And so when we back in 2019, we actually did better than we did in 2018, which was cool. And we really enjoyed it. We enjoyed making those friendships and being part of that fraternity. But it's less about the cap, the competition itself, the physical on the stage. I mean, that means a huge, it's important. But we also found that from our own experiences, the community, the shared community, people who think like other brass players, being able to learn from each other, even just in conversation, walking down the hall, that type of thing. Unfortunately, 2020 was canceled, and then when they came back the last 2 years, they were in Alabama, which was a bit too far to travel. So we're hoping to get back into the swing of things next year when they come further up north. And then what we tried to do last year in 2023 was the inaugural Great Canadian Brass Band Festival. It wasn't really a competition, but it definitely worked on the community aspect and getting brass players together and having some fun.
Oh, whoa. So that sounds like an amazing event. So, yeah, keep me posted how things go and if you win and such. So I love that. I'm wondering, are you open to new musicians? Like, where do you get your lifeblood and what's the process there?
For us, the because we are a prescribed member, it's not just an open forum. So we can afford to be picky choosy a little bit, and you do need some experience to be coming in, but we do have some vacancies, so people can reach out and find out what those vacancies are, because we are not full at 25 right now.
Okay, so if you
So
moved here from somewhere else and had a great ability in playing a brass instrument, they should get in touch with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, is there anything else that you wanted to add?
Just that if you're a music lover of any type, I feel that this concert that we have coming up is something you would enjoy, especially if you haven't heard of brass band. You'll be quite surprised at what you're going to hear. It's a great opportunity, and then the bonus on top of that is you're going to hear one of the world's finest brass players there. And if you're one of these individuals who are trying to brass players who are trying to find a home to play, you can come to the concert, chat with us at intermission. Even not if you don't have a brass instrument in your hand, we'd still love to meet you.
Okay, I love that. I do end podcasts with the guest's response to the same question. So, what is one thing that you would name that you really like about this community? And I realize I haven't asked you if you live in Richmond Hill or where actually you live.
I do not live in Richmond Hill, but I have spent a fair amount of time performing in Richmond Hill before and after the Performing Arts Center was built. So that sort of ties in a little bit with my answer to you, because there are so many things that are great about Richmond Hill. I'm not denying that. But I think the cultural development that has been going on in the last several or the last decade and a bit is, I think, something that Richmond Hill is just awesome about. I remember 15 years ago, before the Richmond Hill Performing Arts Center was there, and then seeing the explosion that has occurred since you've had that building placed. So that cultural growth is impressive, and that's what I like about Richmond Hill.
Okay, well, thank you for reminding me of that. I think sometimes I take it for granted. It just celebrated about a week ago its 15th anniversary. I was there for the opening night, and it's yeah. So thank you for reminding me of that. Okay, I'm going to add things your website, the Eventbrite link to get tickets for the April 6th concert, and looking forward to meeting you. So again, Rita, thank you so much for taking the time to do the podcast.
Our pleasure.